Last week, I spoke just a little bit of time after I had come back from 4 weeks on retreat. This was at Spirit Rock, a personal retreat. And I shared some of what I had experienced. And I found myself framing the talk. It was sort of what came out when I decided what to share, that there were many aspects of the retreat which represented ways of deepening practice. So last time I framed sharing about my retreat in terms of sharing, identifying really 10 ways of deepening practice. And these are not comprehensive, particularly. There are many that I'm very aware of that I did not identify. And so this is not a comprehensive list from last week, but it was a way of bringing our attention to asking, particularly in the context of daily life and the whole flow of our lives, what helps me to deepen my practice? What, in other words, helps my practice to keep developing? From a certain perspective, there's not a more important question. Because what we most want is just to keep deepening. We can also use the language of keeping learning, keeping developing in multiple ways. And that's really one sense of an actual beautiful way to talk about, identify the meaning of our lives. What is better than talking about learning and deepening and what's most important? Maybe we frame it in terms of learning and deepening in our wisdom, love, and skillful action. And our practice helps us keep that process going. And so last time, on the basis of my own retreat, I identified 10 ways of deepening. And I invited each of us who were here last time to see if one or two of the ways of deepening resonated and such that we would like to emphasize those ways of deepening in the last week. How many people kept with that in the last week? Yeah. That's great. And so part of what we'll do today is give some time in our discussion for people to share what you might have found. And so what I want to do today is to identify again those 10 ways, but go into a little more depth about each of them that I did last time. And so let's start by first putting the 10 ways on the screen share. So now would be the time, Bill, to do that. And we can just take a look. This is the preview, really, of the talk. Attend retreats, times of intensive training. Number two, remember the core intention to be aware and awake as often as possible. Number three, connect being aware or mindful or working with a wisdom teaching with loving kindness and compassion. Similar themes we looked at earlier in previous sessions. Ask often, what is my practice right now? What is my way of practicing right now? Might be mindfulness while walking or doing the dishes or loving kindness or compassion with someone or some other way of being present and aware and being guided by wisdom and kindness. Number five, ask what is my next step, or what are my next two steps in deepening my practice? What is my learning edge? Again, it might be a variety of ways of deepening, including all the ones on this list. There might be ones that I haven't mentioned on the list. I haven't talked so much, for example, about formal practice, but it could be related to that. Number six, another way of deepening, pausing, stopping, and resetting, often resetting one's intention a few times a day is key. Number seven, prioritizing in one's life. What's most important in my life? What do I need to let go of to make more room for what's most important? Number eight, recognize the importance of subtle body energy work, as in many approaches, including Qigong, some Tibetan practice, some aspects of yoga. And bring this into one's life, helping with embodiment and shifting one's sense of the body. So this particular one I'll come back to, but I mentioned this because this was very important in my retreat. Most teachers, if they had a list of 10 ways of deepening, probably wouldn't mention this one. So this is, again, I'll come back to all of these. Number nine, one familiar to us from our time, you know, both in talks and in our day long, invite not doing in meditation and daily life, and balance this with the importance at times of doing. And so I mentioned there are talks on doing and not doing on Dharma Seed and also on the Marin Sangha website. Number 10, no ways of coming back when one is stuck or lost or not present or caught in reactivity. One can set intentions to notice when these occur and to respond as skillfully as possible. We can let go of the screen share. And I'll come back to this right at the end, you know, in helping us to set intentions. So again, I'll go fairly briefly over each of the 10 and then give room for talking together and sharing some of our experience. So number one, attend retreats, which can be understood as times of intensive training of one day or longer regularly. So this is crucial. This is really, again, a retreat, which could be, you know, could be a day or longer, could even be shorter. Think of as a period of intensive training. We're only focusing for a period of time on some aspect of practice. It could be mindfulness or concentration or, you know, grounding in the body, could be focused on daily life, all sorts of things. And we, you know, a fruit of a retreat is that we get a kind of intensive training, but we also really often open up a way that we get away a little bit from our daily lives. We get more perspective. We may get a certain amount of spaciousness about what's important, about the big picture. That certainly happened to me in 4 weeks on retreat, that we get perspective. And, you know, one ancient practice that I think I did not mention last time that I've been doing for most of the last 35 years is a Sabbath practice. You know, in so many cultures, the way of deepening the core values in one's life had to do with taking a Sabbath day. You know, many traditions across the world and getting away from daily habits. People do it in different ways. A lot of the people I work with one-on-one have found it really important to do some kind of Sabbath. And often they don't do a whole day, and often they don't do it every week. Some people might do a 3-hour intensive morning twice a month. If one can do it on the same day, it really helps. I typically do mine on Wednesdays. Because historically, what I would do when before the pandemic, I would go to Spirit Rock. I would often teach on Wednesdays and then stay the rest of the day and join a retreat and sit in the staff area and practice for about, whatever, 7 hours or 6 or 7 hours. And so I still do it on Wednesdays. I try not to schedule anything on Wednesdays. So a Sabbath is a beautiful way to do a retreat, a mini retreat, and just find what works for you. Doing 3 hours one day a week, especially if you do it on the same day, would make a huge difference. It's made a big difference for me doing it about 35 years. It really gives a rhythm. It's a little bit like I'm on retreat again, once a week. Number two, remember the core intention to be aware and awake as often as possible. Remembering the definition of a Buddha is one who is awake. And again, on a retreat, one can have more moments per day, per hour, in which one is awake. But can we do things which help us to remember to be aware? What helps us during the day to be aware? One thing that I do is I come back to intentions. I set intentions, take about 2 or 3 minutes, 4 times a day to set intentions, and that's helpful. You can do it twice a day, set your intention to be aware, and try to remember this. It could be artwork. You could put something on your refrigerator, a sign, be aware, whatever you might do. What helps? Without being too much connected with one's superego and judgmental mind. What helps one to remember that core intention? Number three, this is related to the talk I gave in January, I think. Connect being aware or mindful or working with a wisdom teaching with loving kindness and compassion. So this is really about the integration of the kind heart with mindfulness or wisdom. And again, I've spoken about how that sometimes gets disconnected in the insight meditation world, where loving kindness is a little more marginal. Maybe it's a practice we do on the side. But how do we bring in loving kindness in a way which really integrates with our mindfulness, with our awareness, to really have that aspiration? This was a big practice for me during the retreat. I think I mentioned last time, my default practice during the retreat was radiating metta, filling awareness. I would have a big expanse of awareness, and it'd be filled with radiating metta, with this quality of metta coming from the heart, but not requiring much effort. It was, after a while, it was just there, which is a nice place to be, just to have the radiating metta. And I would just walk, and I'd be there with the trees and the, the landscape and the turkeys and the people. And it would be a main practice in the dining hall. So bringing those together can be very, very powerful. Number four, ask, what's my practice right now? This is something we can bring into daily life. And it might be, I'm washing the dishes. Can I make this practice? Maybe I'm just mindful with the dishes, for people who wash the dishes. And I personally have a dishwasher at home, which I virtually have never used. Anyone want it? Okay. We'll get it to Quebec somehow. Okay. There you go. But it's really asking in a given moment, what kind of practice can I do now that, without being too heavy about it, and it really has to come out of one's own motivation. I like the quote, I don't know if I gave this last time, from Achen Chah, everywhere you look is the Dharma. constructing a building, walking down the road, sitting in the bathroom, being in the meditation hall, all of this is Dharma. There's nothing in the world that is not Dharma. So he's really implying it's all practice, all a place to learn. One thing I like to do that I learned from one of my teachers is emphasize the practices that we can work with in daily life that are the easiest for you. And so, you know, we can create a hierarchy of difficulty of practices. Maybe taking a walk and being mindful is relatively easy. And for me, the hardest is being on the computer, right? So how can we, and so what can we gravitate to the ones that are easiest, you know? And then a similar practice is to have sort of a hierarchy of practices, going with the practice that is doable in the moment, you know, maybe in, you know, maybe right now, as we're listening, can I be aware of my body at the same time that I'm listening? Or is it enough just to really listen carefully? You know, and there's a practice which I think I've sometimes mentioned called mixing practice, which is something I learned in the Tibetan tradition, which they do in some monasteries, where you first meditate and you stabilize, let's say in mindfulness or awareness, stabilize in a quality, and then you get up from your meditation and apply your practice to a given activity. This is called in the Tibetan tradition mingling or mixing. They do this in a formal way. They do mixing practice where they sit in meditation and then they would actually practice getting up and walking and keeping the same awareness, or talking with someone else and keeping the same awareness, and so forth. So that's a fourth practice. Number five, ask, and this is really the whole emphasis of the talk from today and last time, ask, what is my next step? Or what are my next two steps? What's my learning edge? I think all that renders our practice meaningful is having a sense of I'm learning something now. I have a learning edge. You know, when I work with people one-on-one, one of my goals is to, between sessions, have a next step or a learning edge that people can implement in the period of time between meetings. And this is really wonderful to take on. And again, what we want to find is something which is not too much, which is doable, and which we can commit to. And I often like to recommend to people that when we find our learning edge, like maybe today, we make a commitment to doing it every day for a week. And then, recommit after 1 week. So, you know, just seeing what that learning edge is. Could be what I've mentioned in my 10. It could be things I haven't mentioned, like connect more with friends or community, or, you know, talk with a friend once a week about practice. You know, we sometimes have thought about that, former in Sangha. How do we have more community that can strengthen us, let's say, between Sundays? Really something to think about. Number six, pausing. Stopping and resettling a few times a day. And this is especially valuable if one is stuck or lost in thought. Can you have a habit when there's reactivity of noticing it and pausing, coming back to mindfulness, not being taken away? This is one way of doing it. You know, one way that I work with this, especially I've gone back to this since the retreat, is with the area of daily life that's the hardest for me in terms of mindfulness, which is being on the computer. Does anyone have good mindfulness on the computer? Yeah, very good. Maybe you'll have to share later, Bill, how what helps for you. But for me, it's not easy. There's some, you know, there's some ways of being on the computer which are easier than others. And so what I've gone back to, I have a 45-minute recording in which there's a bell rung every 5 minutes. And I, when the bell rings, I stop and come back to awareness if I'm not aware while being on the computer. And it really makes a difference, you know. And again, being on a computer is the hardest for me and probably for many, if not most of us, but it can really make a difference. And of course, sometimes I'm just so immersed in it that the bell rings and I pretty much don't hear it. So, you know, when you know, that happens too. And yeah, so what this pausing is a way to really work with habits and moments of reactivity and to work with that. Number seven, prioritizing. Again, this is a fruit of retreats when, you know, there's enough quiet time and being away from daily habits where you can get the big picture. And so on this retreat, I really had a sense what's most important. What do I let go of? How do we do that? We can, of course, do that without being at a retreat. What do I let go of? How does that manifest in terms of my daily routine? It's something, if that's one that calls us, we can ask that question. It's not easy, right? This is not an easy practice. Habits are strong, you know? And for me, I wanted to shift in a way that emphasizes particularly practice, formal practice, wants to emphasize having my Sabbath be a little bit stronger, want to emphasize making time for writing and prioritizing being, you know, with people close to me, do that a little bit more. So that's number seven. Again, listening for what resonates with you, just listening to the one or two which resonate. Number eight, this is the one about the importance of what I call subtle energy, subtle body energy work. You know, and this is a little bit more esoteric. And in insight meditation world, it's not something we talk about very much. You know, in the teachings of the Buddha, there isn't really a lot of emphasis. The system of the chakras and the model of the subtle energy mostly was only developed about 800 years after the Buddha, you know, around 300 or 400. There are aspects of it with the Buddha and earlier tradition. Some of you know the word piti, P-I-T-I, which is one of the factors of awakening. And that's really, you know, an early, relatively undeveloped version of the subtle body energy. And I mentioned last time, I think, that I've been doing a Tibetan practice called Tummo for about 6 years. I did it at the retreat about 2 hours a day, and very helpful to what it tends to do is it tends to fill up one's consciousness with this other, you know, with this kind of the subtle energy of the body, which some of us know from retreats, from meditation, from maybe from yoga, from qigong, because those can all activate it. But it gets filled up. The mind gets almost totally quiet when the subtle energy is strong. And it's a practice that I pretty much do every day. And it also leads to a very different sense of the nature of one's body. Not so solid, but more like a container of this energy, which is actually continuous with the subtle energy of the world, of the universe. You know, and it goes into some experiences which people sometimes experience on psychedelics also. That can also sometimes open up to this energy. But it's very helpful. And again, one can do that by regular qigong, by working with yoga, particularly with practices like pranayama. And for me, it's quite helpful. I think I've sometimes mentioned how in some cases where people have really, really, really active minds and mindfulness and meditation don't help so much, I take people into a practice like qigong or yoga where the subtle energy gets activated, because that can actually lead to a quieting of the mind in ways that mindfulness doesn't work. It's interesting, right? I've certainly experienced that in working with some people. Number nine, our old friend, not doing. A very important practice for me during the retreat of often inviting myself as a meditator, as a doer, to, having done its work, to not be there. And there are very important places in practice, particularly when the mind gets more quiet, a little more advanced as a practice, when the mind gets quiet and we invite the active doer meditator to take a back seat and just sometimes let the practice itself have its own energy. This was very important for me during the retreat. In fact, the whole emphasis on not doing that I've developed came out of a retreat, I think 3 years ago, about a month, where I invited, this was during the pandemic, where I invited the practice of not doing, and I saw how much conditioning I had to be a doer, so to speak. You know, so much of my life I've been a good doer and got rewards for it. Anyone relate to that? Yeah, a lot of us, right? And so it can be a really helpful complement. And again, the doing is crucial and important. And this isn't, and when I've taught it in more depth, I talk about balancing doing and not doing. And there's a very crucial place for doing and effort, and there's a very crucial place for not deliberately trying to do and letting the, letting the meditation occur more on its own. Yeah. And again, this resonates with many spiritual traditions. I think when I have taught it here, I've referred often to the Taoist tradition, where there's even a term for not doing, wu wei in Chinese is the term for not doing, which we find particularly in Chuang Tzu and Lao Tzu. Lao Tzu says, by doing nothing, everything is done. The great Tibetan teacher Longchenpa says, this is about the advanced stages of meditation, if you meditate again and again, you will see that there is nothing to cultivate in meditation. Another way to explain that is that ultimately we're opening up to our deep nature, which we don't create. We're opening up to our deep nature of wisdom and love and awareness. And we don't create it and we don't make it happen. In a way, we learn how to get out of the way so that love and wisdom can be there. I think we know that in other contexts. Sometimes, maybe in relationships, we know love can be there when we get out of the way, when we don't have an agenda. So that's the ninth practice. Number 10, and this could be a whole talk, no ways of coming back when one is stuck or lost or not present or caught in reactivity, lost in thought. Have a set of ways to do that and even set intentions. Maybe if you are entering a period when you have a lot in your mind and you're very much You know it's a possibility of getting lost or stuck in some particular pattern. Set the intention to be present when it occurs. You can't stop it from happening, but you can be able to notice it sooner rather than later. And that makes all the difference, you know, to really look out for reactivity, look out for being lost. The Tibetan phrase, turn all obstacles into the path of practice. And so which of these call you? Let's put the list, Bill, back up on the screen. Which of the ones we've mentioned, and think of one or two of them, which of these call you? Maybe call you for the next period of time, the next week, the next month. Attend a retreat. It might be schedule a retreat so you know you're doing it. Remember the core attention to be aware. Connect awareness or mindfulness or wisdom with loving kindness and compassion, the mind and the heart, we might say. Ask often, what's my practice right now? And again, listen for what calls you as I'm reading these. Ask, what's my next step or my next two steps in deepening my practice? That's what we're doing now. Pausing a few times a day. Number 7, prioritizing in one's life. What's most important? What do I need to let go of? Number 8, recognize the importance of subtle body energy work, as in many different approaches, Qigong, yoga, some Tibetan practice, and so forth. Number 9, invite not doing in meditation and daily life, and balance this at times with the importance of doing. Number 10, no ways of coming back when you're stuck or lost in thought or not present or caught in reactivity. So again, which of these call you? Which might you like to keep going in the next period of time? You can let go of the screen share now. I'll close just with a very simple quote from the Tibetan teacher Shabkar. Let your life and practice be one. That's our long-term intention. Let our life and practice be one. Let me invite us just to sit quietly with any thoughts that came from this, any intentions, sense of maybe one or two that call you. We have some time now for talking and sharing together. It could be to share a way of deepening I didn't mention that's important for you. It could be to share some of what you've explored during the last week that was helpful. Could be to ask a question, clarify one of the 10 ways of deepening. Let's just open it up. So you can raise your hand, I can see you, or you can do the raised hand function. Deborah, please.
I just want to say that listening to you tonight, I think I've been forgetting to remember. And I think remembering that pausing and stopping and coming back into my body and aligning my breath with my body and aligning my posture and just remembering what the heck it is I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
That's the one that resonates for me most. And I also, you know, what's my next edge? So thank you again, once again, Donald.
Yeah, thanks, Deborah. And yeah, what you could do is just have a strong intention, let's say to pause 3 times a day, you know, or more, but just to have that intention and write it down somewhere, maybe where it's obvious. And
I have signs up.
Okay, fantastic.
I don't always remember to pay attention to them. And I think just recently, I've been forgetting to remember. So yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I like the way you express that, forgetting to remember. It's really for the paradoxical nature of it is it tickles me.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mary, please.
One of the things that I did, I took your suggestion about thinking about some way that would remind me. And I'm sitting here at my computer right now, you know, looking at the screen, which I do a lot, of course, during the workday. And but across the room is a huge window.
Yeah.
And beyond the window are some beautiful trees. And I made the decision that every time I look up and see a tree, that I would remember to be aware.
Yeah, wow.
And that just a tree. And so now, not only when I look out the window, but like this morning I was traveling on the freeway and it's like, look at all those trees.
Oh, beautiful.
So all those opportunities to be mindful and look at all those. I mean, so now the word tree and mindfulness have become associated. So it's been fun.
It sounds like taking that as an intention, there are probably just many, many more moments of mindfulness during the day.
Many more. Because the tree is just like a delightful reminder. So better than a note, which I've had notes around the house, but then I don't notice them. So anyway, that's my little trick.
I love that. Yeah, and any of these, feel free. Mary doesn't have a copyright on that one. So if these inspire us, that was similar to my time on retreat when I would go outside and I would see a tree. It would just remind me of the radiating metta that includes the trees, right? Yeah, so thank you. I love that. That sounds really creative, particularly, you know, when you're, it sounds like also when you're on your computer. Well, yeah, that's great. Okay, other sharing or question? Leslie, yeah.
Talking about the radiating loving kindness, do you actually do like a particular visualization, or do you just say the words radiating loving kindness, or do you have a way you visualize it?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Leslie. I practiced for quite a while with visualizations, and I taught on Wednesdays for at Spirit Rock on two sessions on loving kindness, and I recorded a guided meditation on radiating metta, which has the visualization that probably many of us are familiar with, where you start like in the room and have it expand out and visualize it going out further and further. So I did that a lot. At a certain point, the visualization wasn't necessary, that I could actually just go and even touch the heart area and it would fill up the space, right? And that's over, a number of years. And so that's what I mostly do these days. Sometimes it can help to have a little more intention and energy, but mostly it's just right there without trying much. Yeah. But that's the fruit of, some years of practicing it. Yeah. So that's where that would be, I think, in January under my name on Dharma Seed, the guided meditation on radiating metta. Yeah, thanks. It's a beautiful practice. It really has been so important to me to be more explicit about connecting wisdom, awareness, mindfulness, and loving kindness and compassion. Because, you know, as in the talk I gave in January, they can get disconnected pretty easily. You know, and they're often disconnected in our culture. So to me, that's a really important one. Yeah, please, Zoe.
So during the first sit of tonight, I was working with Radiating Metta, which was really good for me because I came into this evening with my typical really busy mind.
Yeah.
And I have some themes that go on. If I'm not busy at work, then when I'm not working, I tend to go to processing problems and trying to problem solve things in my life, and which spins into worry at times. And so I sat down and I started with the metta, I was sort of competing with this busy mind. And so I decided to just say a phrase to help me get started. So I said, I am love and I am radiating love. And I just kept repeating it until finally my busy mind shut up and I sort of dropped down into a space where there was just nothing other than just feeling that metta, you know, sort of radiating, which was really lovely for me to do that.
Wow, it sounds beautiful and it sounds very, very skillful just to know what it takes to quiet that busy mind and, you know, really using a form of concentration, concentrating on the phrases that can over time, have the busy mind not be so much there, you know, and that's effectively, you know, we use concentration to keep coming back and the busy mind sort of lessens as we keep doing that. But to know that you can do phrases like that, even when your mind is busy, it's really important. And you can have confidence in bringing it in, you know, over and over again in the future, right?
Yeah.
That's really...
That's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, really, really important. And you can even, generalize it to other situations. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you. And how many can relate to that? Anyone else? Sometimes, yeah, just with that busy mind and, to know what's helpful. That really relates to my, I think, number 10, when the mind is really busy, what's helpful to go more deeply in practice? And it could be the repetition like that, some form of concentration. You know, metta has aspects of concentration, you know, as we know. Maybe time for one or two more. Bill, do you want to share about mindfulness on the computer?
Well, yeah, I could say something about that. I've been a computer user for about 46, 47 years and a computer owner for about 44 years. So asking me how I'm mindful on the computer is like asking me how I'm mindful when I'm wearing shoes. The computer is just something that I do tasks with. Unless, you know, if the computer is screwing up, then what I can do is notice how I'm reacting and notice what my attitude is.
Yeah.
But most of the time, I don't really think about the computer. I think about what it is that I'm doing at the computer. And that's not a lot different from what I'm doing when I'm, you know, sitting, writing or reading or unloading the dishwasher or whatever. So I think I have a less contentious relationship with computers than most of the people I know.
Yeah. And are you aware of your body? Are you aware of something besides just the task at hand?
Well, when I'm really involved in a task, well, it's sort of like when I'm doing something like Qigong, I'm not really, no, that's not a good analogy. When I'm playing the drums, for instance, I'm not aware of my body, and yet I am completely in my body.
Yeah.
But I'm not thinking about my body. It's not in my awareness. And yet I am completely in the body. When I'm typing at the computer, it's a little bit different. When I'm really absorbed in a task, I'm just absorbed in the task. It's sort of like when I'm reading something that's fascinating, I'm not aware of my body. If something's going wrong, then I find that the touching the body or coming back into the body is a very good way of centering.
Yeah, because my aspiration is to you know, I can, you know, I'm typically totally absorbed, totally focused, but my aspiration is to not have that be the whole story, but also have a wide awareness that holds the absorption. You know, mm-hmm. That's partly what I'm getting at. So that there's, so it's not just absorbed in the task, because that is happening. If I'm reading or at the computer, I can be very focused and right there, but I'm not, you know. So for me, actually, sometimes being aware of the body does help.
Well, I do enjoy, though, the absorption, but it reminds me of a slightly different topic that you talked about, which was the dealing with the busy mind. Something that I do when my mind is really busy is just let the mind be busy and at the same time be aware of the space in which it's being busy.
Yeah.
And the space itself is still.
Yeah, that's nice. And that could be something really also applied, you know, at the computer or thinking. To connect with the larger space, because that would go in the direction I was pointing to. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Bill.